Side honor them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I in a tie can just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, November the 12th, 2025, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. And you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we say often on this program, we don't wish our enemies well, folks, because when the Terminator's doing well, we're doing really, really poorly. And remind me later, folks, to address that issue of the Terminator, because I have something very important related to that to discuss on the program that I think possibly bring some clarity to this situation that otherwise seems to leave people befuddled and confused and perplexed. Anyway, folks, it's been about a week since we've been together. There have been some very important, in fact, I would say even groundbreaking things that have taken place since then, which, of course, we will be talking about today. The first of which, folks, is the fact that the President of the United States has just met with the interim president of Syria for the very first time. Not just in the last year, folks, but for the first time that the Ottoman Empire fell apart and Syria became an independent nation, has the Syrian president actually visited the White House. Naturally, the Jews are furious. They are screaming from one end of the universe to the other, one end of the Jewiverse to the other, saying that the president has just welcomed a jihadist into the White House. And, with friends like this, who needs enemies? And this is actually a really big deal, folks. We're going to be talking about that with our good friend Stas here in just a few moments. The other big news, folks, is the announcement, or I guess the revealing of the fact that the United States is getting ready to build not just a military base in Damascus, Syria, but also a military base in southern Israel. A big one, folks. $500 million, enough to serve the needs of 2,000 troops. The Jews are not happy about that either, folks, because they see that there are Gentile soldiers that are going to be on Israeli soil, polluting the purity of the promised land with the presence of Gentiles there. And of course, folks, all of this being just a repeat of what happened 2,000 years ago when the Romans were there. Okay. And even though they haven't said it yet, folks, rest assured at some point they will say this in their op-eds and in their complaints. They will say this is just like it was 2,000 years ago when the Romans were here occupying our country and telling us what we could and could not do. And folks, they're correct. As we have said many times on this program now over the course of well over a decade, we are seeing a repeat of what happened 2,000 years ago. And this is not just, an issue of Trivial Pursuit, folks. There are very important issues involved in this that literally will find their way to into the homes of probably every human being on the planet today. Anyway, folks, again, I apologize for the sound quality. We have to use a free service to do this, and it's just like with everything else. If it's cheap, then it's cheap, and that means you're going to get what you pay for. But nevertheless, despite the fact that the sound quality might not be the best, I can assure you that the conversation and the analysis that you're going to hear today will more than make up for the sound quality. So anyway, folks, here's what's happened in the last week since we've been together. The U.S. now is seeking, through the State Department, it is seeking a U.N. resolution through the U.N. Security Council in order to internationalize this Gaza stabilization force that the president intends to use in order to run the Jews out of Gaza and begin the process of rebuilding it again and giving it to the Gazan people. And ultimately, folks, so that it can be part of this Palestinian state that the president intends to see created as well. Now, this is very important, folks, because one of the things that President Trump has done, going all the way back to his first term, is that he really denigrated the United Nations, and for completely understandable reasons, folks. I mean, the United Nations is, you know, for the most part, to a large extent, it is a useless organization. All that it does is make noise. The fact that it has issued several resolutions telling the Jews to give the land back that they stole in 1967, and none of these resolutions have actually bore fruit. However, Iraq was destroyed twice because of UN mandates, and Libya was destroyed because of a UN mandate. So it basically has been a rubber stamp for Israel and the United States. Nevertheless, the president, despite the fact that he is firmly on the record of being not particularly fond of the UN, nevertheless, he recognizes the value that would come from getting an international mandate for what he plans to do in Gaza. Now, again, folks, you're going to hear plenty of, you're going to hear plenty of tongue-in-cheek commentary here as we discuss these things, about just how far off base most of the analysts and their analysis is out there with regards to Trump, President Trump, and what he's trying to do in the Middle East. Now, again, folks, I take no personal satisfaction in doing this. I really wish we didn't have to have this conversation. I really wish that everybody was on the same page, everybody understood what the president is trying to achieve, and that they understood the fact that he is in an extremely difficult position, and that he can't just say and do whatever he wants to say and do. He has to work through an extremely complex and complicated, and dare we even say convoluted, system in order to get anything done, anything. You know, you have judges here in America who are, slamming the door in his face and saying, no, you can't do this, and no, you can't do that. Just over domestic policy issues, dealing with the shutdown, dealing with mobilizing the National Guard to certain cities with regards to, food stamp benefits and things like that. So if he can't move unimpeded in his own country dealing with domestic issues, why should anybody think that he's going to have a free hand when he's making decisions that really, really get under the lizard skin of the Jews? Okay. Now, this goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the program, folks, about this issue of the Terminator. Okay. As you, those of you who follow the website in this program know, this is a common theme that we reference, because it really is a good, I hate to use anything out of Hollywood as a good teaching guide in explaining the status of our world these days, but this really does suffice, folks. Now, you'll remember that in all of the Terminator movies, they all follow a similar storyline. You've got these machines from the future that look and behave like human beings, but they're actually just machines that have been built in order to destroy the humans. And you'll remember in these movies, folks, whenever there is a gun battle going on between, you know, the Connor clan and one of these Terminators, you know, they're unloading, you know, shotgun blast after shotgun blast, and the Terminator gets knocked down, and he's momentarily disabled, okay? But then a few seconds later, he shakes it off, and he's on his feet again. All right. This is a good representation, folks, of what the president has to deal with. What he has to deal with in terms of Israel, what he has to deal with in terms of the Jews, and what he has to deal with in terms of Benjamin Netanyahu. Okay, he really is dealing with a real-life version of the Terminator, where as soon as you throw something at them, okay, it'll knock them down, it'll stun them, it'll, you know, it'll leave their head spinning or their computer, you know, out of whack for a few seconds, and then they're back on their feet again and back doing business. This is the reason why, folks, the president has to put these things together in the manner that he does, okay? You know, today, the new news, the Terminator has just crawled up off the floor, and now there's a new Epstein thing that has erupted, okay? And so this is how it goes, folks. And so for those of you out there who just cannot seem to wrap your head around why the president doesn't just, quote, pick up the phone and call Netanyahu and tell him to do this and tell him to do that, it's not as simple as that. Again, I hate to have to use, you know, anything out of Hollywood as a metaphor in explaining the situation, but I think that that is a pretty good explanation. Stas, what do you think as far as that explanation goes?
Oh. I missed the overall general thing. Wait, can you repeat the synopsis just briefly? Sorry.
The Terminator thing.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, that is the perfect description of our situation, the Terminator. And my obsession lately is that the Gentile world cannot focus on that. So anything derails our people, the Gentiles.
Yeah.
And they don't want to face that. So if you criticize Israel or any of the stuff that we talk about in The Ugly Truth, they can't seem to grasp it. So they'll say, if you say to someone, wow, we've got to do something, Israel is genociding the Middle East and Gaza and we're next, they'll go, yeah, it's the Zionist. And they'll stop there. And they'll think you're an idiot for being such detail, but that's a political movement. And a lot of people might agree with that. And you step off to the next, your E. Michael Jones, your Michael Hoffman guys, type like that. And they'll go, yeah, you're right. That's a political thing. And it's really because these people have gone away from the Old Testament. And they have now focused on the Talmud, which is another thing that loses focus because that's just a commentary on the Old Testament and nobody can deal with it. No, you know, that's connected to Jesus and you better not go away from that. And everybody, I think a lot of people, I don't know what you think of this, they view the Old Testament God as a stern father and these are dark times and everybody's decadent and they're way off kilter. So they say, you know what, people need to be punished like the God of the Old Testament would do to us. Or something like that. I don't know if I'm going too far, but
you make perfect sense. You are making perfect sense.
Yeah.
But the point that you are making is the fact that the Gentiles, philosophically speaking, are all over the place. They're all over the map. They're everywhere all at once, but yet at the same time, they're nowhere. And this is the reason why Whereas our enemies, who, you know, are very focused, they're very organized, they're not all over the place. They have a very simple method that they use that they stick to. And in doing this, there is organization and there is order. And this is the reason why they are able to marshal the kinds of influence and power over us, even though they have such small numbers.
Yes, yes. And I think in no small part, so a lot of people will say, well, this is a Christian nation, and Obama said it isn't anymore, and they'll focus on that. Or somebody, a liberal enemy,
mm-hmm.
will say something, and they're very happy. Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose if this was strictly a Christian nation, then we wouldn't permit any war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wouldn't. That would be un-Christian to attack Iraq and on all these places. And the Christian world, the Gentile world, can't make separation from any of this stuff. We just see it time and time again. They get uncomfortable, or they don't want to separate, and it's seen as forbidden or Gnostic or weird to have a peaceful Jesus unconnected to the Old Testament. So I just recently mm-hmm. had a conversation with somebody, and I repeated to them a phrase from the Old Testament. Moses said, "Happy are those who dash the children's heads against the rocks."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, "What do you?" Think to this guy, and he said, well, that meant that they were fighting these awful pagans in that day in that region, and that's all over now. We have a new covenant. That's all stripped away. That's buried. Don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe the Christians have moved on and mm-hmm. think that that's been removed, but it clearly mm-hmm. hasn't been removed.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're talking about. And, you know, in the circles of conspiracy or alternative politics, alternative media, whatever, you know, they won't go away from that either. They'll say, oh, yeah, you know, that's wrong, and we've turned away from that. And I don't know. It's just people are uncomfortable with criticizing and that, and you know, I've thought about it a million ways. So one thing I think is people want to feel like that they are that interesting story, and they are chosen by
mm-hmm.
God.
Mm-hmm.
It's uncomfortable to people. It's uncomfortable to me, I think, sometimes, saying that, well, that was a regional God that a group chose.
Mm-hmm.
And
for themselves.
For themselves.
Yeah, not anybody else. Not anybody else.
And people can't stomach it. They go, no, that's God too. Where we're being all punished now because those people have turned their back against the law, and Jesus upheld the law. Well, if Jesus held up the law, then does that mean Jesus is in favor of Deuteronomy 20:16 that you quote often? Is that
yep.
the kind of Jesus, you know?
I don't remember. You know, I spent 12 years in Catholic school. And granted, we didn't spend a lot of time reading the Bible, but we did spend a lot of time hearing the gospel and mass. And I don't remember Jesus ever talking about how important it was that you go into a place and you save alive nothing that breathes, which is the section of Deuteronomy that you're quoting right there. I don't remember him ever saying that. I don't remember him ever saying, you know, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. So, yeah, those are all excellent points that you just made, Stas, and directly relevant to everything that is going on today, particularly with the president meeting with the leader of Syria. I've got some sound bites that I want to play, so everybody, let's just sit back here and give these things a listen, and here we go.
President Trump welcomed the president of Syria at the White House today and announced a new partnership with the country. Ahmed al-Sharaa led efforts to overthrow former Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad last year. He is a former member of al-Qaeda but has since denounced the group. On Friday, the Trump administration removed his name from a list of global terrorists, and today it announced Syria would join a U.S.-led coalition to defeat ISIS. Unlike most of President Trump's meetings with foreign leaders, the press was not allowed inside the room to ask questions. This cell phone video from CBS's Aaron Navarro is the only footage we have of al-Sharaa leaving the White House. Here's what President Trump said about the meeting hours later.
He's a very strong leader. He comes from a very tough place, and he's a tough guy. I liked him. I get along with him, the president, the new president in Syria. And we'll do everything we can to make Syria successful because that's part of the Middle East.
CBS News national security contributor Sam Vinograd joins us now. So, Sam, what message does it send for President Trump to welcome the Syrian president to the White House? And how much should we read into the fact that the meeting was not open to the press and that he wasn't necessarily welcomed into the White House in the typical way that many foreign leaders are with cameras and the like?
Well, Lindsay, I think it's unfortunate the press was not allowed to ask Ahmed al-Sharaa some tough questions about his record and his plans for Syria. I do think it's the right call that President al-Sharaa was not given all the same accolades as other visiting officials. Many security analysts are hoping that President al-Sharaa is committed to stabilizing Syria, to denouncing terrorism, to turning away from Russia and Iran, which had been partners of the al-Assad regime for decades. But the proof is going to be in the pudding. President al-Sharaa is certainly saying all the right things when it comes to, for example, counterterrorism cooperation with the United States and his focus on unifying Syria. But whether he's being pragmatic in the short term or is committed to pragmatism over his original ideology over the longer term, Lindsay, is an outstanding question.
What can the U.S. and Syria do for each other? What do both sides want from this relationship?
Well, in the short term, the Syrian people desperately need support rebuilding their country. So assistance dollars are going to be desperately needed. There are some problems with that based upon some sanctions that still remain in place, but certainly assistance rebuilding the country. Support is necessary to try to unify the country and to bring various factions together. And at the same time, the United States would greatly benefit from cooperation from Syria in, for example, countering ISIS. That's why this announcement that Syria will now join the Countering ISIS coalition is so important. And over the long term, the United States is looking for Syria to become an ally in the region, to renounce violence against Israel, to calm relations with Lebanon, and to stop turning closer towards Russia and Iran and other countries that are hostile towards U.S. interests.
Sam Vinograd, thank you.
Okay, folks, so that was our first summit of the day dealing with the president receiving Ahmed al-Sharaa to the White House. Stas, are the Jews happy? Is Benjamin Netanyahu happy? Is Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and all of these other insane jihadists who are out to incinerate the world, are they happy about this? Is Trump doing this? Is the president doing this because he has been ordered by Netanyahu and the Jewish lobby and Miriam Adelson and all of the rest of this? Have they ordered him to do this, to make amends with the new leader of Syria and to begin rebuilding that country?
They are not at all happy. He has retaken the muscle in the Syrian region under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
This is yet another thing where I've heard people say, oh, Trump, now he's working with Al-Qaeda. He is a scum. Didn't they do the 9/11 or aren't they controlled like ISIS is controlled by Israeli intelligence? Yeah, but he's in command now, and it's above board. When the Israelis were working with ISIS, they would sort of make comments we prefer ISIS to Assad in these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
That, quite frankly, they knew the goy weren't reading those stories. I mean,
right.
I'm talking like Fuentes now, the goy. I mean, if I could interject and smash in a point, another point that's obsessing me lately is this notion. At the same time, I hope I'm not going too off field, but the idea, a lot of people, when they read this alternative media or any kind of media, of course, everybody's mad. They want to be rich. They don't want to be poor and suffering as they are now. And there's a lot of things where carte blanche people say, you know, all these elites are in on it. Sure, some of them are Jews, but some of them are WASPies, and they have private jet planes, and they party, and you know, not to be too off color, they go to super-duper orgies. black magic orgies. I get it. But for one thing, if we had to be honest with ourselves, like they'll say stuff, they want to take over the world. I'll say to everybody listening now, they have taken over the world. The very rich have dominated us. We are slaves. This is different. What the problem is now is this fanaticism that threatens to blow up the whole world. Mm-hmm. And they're not separating the two, which is more dangerous. I dare say there's probably some guys that meet at Davos or all these elite things that people have obsess over, Bilderberg, Davos, or whatever. And they are running the show, but they would shut up about it. They're not going to admit to you, well, we're the richest people, but are a little bit worried that the Israelis, in fulfilling their biblical mandate mm-hmm. to dominate the Middle East, will get us blown up in their, mm-hmm. especially with their side operation to bind down Russia, so Russia can mm-hmm. help anybody in the Middle East and make their dream of. Of course, they want to destroy the world, but first step is they have to fulfill this idea of entire domination of the greater Middle East, which mm-hmm. is a giant Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
That dictates the Bible saying it. And I think people can't seem to digest that. So if you try to say, well, you know, Netanyahu has gone in and, you know, I've said this to people recently, and I did, well, didn't you notice that he reads what the prophets say before he did the invasion
mm-hmm.
in October 7th. And everything that the Gentiles criticize each other over, they, for some, I don't know if you noticed, they can't seem to level that same criticism at Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll say, oh, this is a tragedy in Gaza, which it is, but none of them will say, hey, you know, let's just say we'll take the news as it was. And they say, well, you messed up on October 7th, you guys, and why should we bail you out? You failed. Take them at the word. And they'll go, oh, no, you know. And at this point, a lot of the right wing has been worse on that. You know, mm-hmm. oh, 1,200 Israelis are murdered, and they'll say all these atrocities and stuff. So therefore, it's unfortunate, but they got to blow everybody away. And they stop there. And you say, well, how many do you need? 1 million? 2 million? When is this going to happen? And this is now moving into the new topic, which is emerging, that as the fight goes on, things get revealed. And now it has come revealed that, at least in recent times, the Israelis apparently need the right on their side.
Mm-hmm.
The American right, which is more tied to the military. And I know a lot
Absolutely.
Of people, it's not fair to say there's not a lot of foreign people that are joining the military, but the core of it and a lot of the elite is this Christian right.
Mm-hmm.
They provide warriors that the left just can't do it. I mean,
right.
you
right.
see these technocratic left warriors, you know, they're not as ferocious as some of the Marines or the SEALs, where these guys, you look at their names, a lot of them are German Protestant, Englishmen, even some, you know, maybe some Catholic Poles and Catholic Italian. They provide this certain undertone thing, and they were, not to rehash an old issue, but they were like into this Charlie Kirk guy that, you know, mostly because I think they want to throw venom back at the left. They're tired of with the trans thing, and they're tired of it. You know, my kid goes to public school. They've come back trans. There's a lot of communism in the school. And this was the real thing. But Charlie Kirk was like saying, yeah, that's all true. The left is evil, but let's realize that we have to back the lone democracy in the Middle East, that's Israel. So you guys, despite all this killing, let's face it, it was as if you didn't support Israel, you would be a communist, postmodernist,
right.
left scum. And then he kind of left it there. But then the bloodshed continued so much that these people started to look at it like, geez, you know.
On the right.
Yeah, on the right. Geez, I'm religious, but you know, it was going on so long that they would take a note, like, wow, geez, it's, how much bombing do you have to do? And some people that had half a brain, a little compassion, like, isn't this going too far? And it looks like it got to Charlie himself. He's like, wow, I'm on here. I'm going toe-to-toe with these liberals across the country. I'm really building up this coalition. But somewhere inside him, he must have been saying, geez, I'm doing evil here. I am.
Yeah, how does somebody complain about or highlight the practice that takes place in America of taking these innocent children and ripping them limb from limb within the wombs of their mother through this process known as abortion, and yet at the same time supports that very same process taking place in Gaza, only it's being done by bombs being dropped on schools and churches and mosques and homes?
Yes, yeah, and I'm sure him being a smart guy, and then, you know, that was the basis for some people coming to Trump in 2016. Of course, a lot of it was the Rust Belt and no jobs. That is a big thing. But there began to be some people realizing that there's nothing in it for us. The military class, a volunteer military, seeing as we made the mistake of invading and killing, you know, there have been in the military class bodies coming home or guys with their faces melted off. And there was people who noticed when Trump said it was ridiculous, you know, a waste of time and blood and you know, eventually I'd have to say, you start to realize, wow, you know, maybe people out in the American public don't think so different to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened now is those same people, I'm starting to realize, have forgotten how difficult it is for Donald J. Trump, our president, or anybody else in any kind of position of power, when they're running up against the Israeli lobby, the
right.
Israeli spy
yeah.
services,
yeah. Right.
and the Israeli monies that fill the different denominational churches around the country, and
mm-hmm.
even squeeze the Roman Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
how much they control, they're forgetting. So it's like, in one sense, in one part they'll go, don't you know there's an overwhelming Illuminati that controls everything, and oh, the Jewish lobby, John Mersheim, and all this stuff. And at the same time, and this is what I can't get over, I probably said it too much in our podcast, at the same time they flip and go, why didn't he just make a call and why
right.
two-state solution, boom, boom, boom.
Right, right. Yeah, they talk about how there's this undefeatable monster that controls everything, but then when it comes time to dump it all on top of the president, they say, all he has to do is pick up the phone, all he has to do is do this, all he has to do is do that. And no, folks, like, you know, going back to what I said earlier about the Terminator, okay, yeah, a normal situation is that a guy, irrespective of how well-built he may be, he takes five rounds from a 12-gauge shotgun, okay, five rounds of double-aught buck, okay, there's no better stopping power than that. And I don't care how well-built the guy is, he's going to go down, and that's it. He's not getting back up. But you're dealing with the Terminator here, okay? So, yeah, it's going to knock him down. It's going to phase him for a minute or half a minute or whatever it is. But then he's going to get up, and it's back to business as usual. And this is what the president is dealing with on a daily basis. We can't even begin to imagine the stuff that the Jews dump on his lap every single day. So, now getting back to this Syria business, Stas, again, folks, we shouldn't have to spend too much time hammering this point home, but if the president truly were the slave and the puppet to Netanyahu and to Miriam Adelson, the Jewish lobby, and all the rest of that, as we have been told, none of this business in Syria would be taking place, okay? What you have here is a situation where the president is going to encircle Israel. There are going to be bases to the north in Lebanon. There are going to be bases to the northeast, Syria. There are going to be bases to the immediate east, to Jordan, West Bank and Jordan. Then it's going to be Sinai. It's going to be Gaza. Okay? So none of this is meeting with the approval of, even though they're not snarling yet, folks. Understand that the Jews view what the president is doing is nothing less than an act of war. And we know this because we referenced it in an article on last week's program. There was an op-ed that had appeared on Israel National News, which is probably the most pro-Netanyahu website on the net. And it was entitled, "The Day That Donald Trump Said No to Israel Annexing the West Bank Is the Day That He Declared War on God." So the reason that we're bringing this up, folks, and the reason why we hammer it as often as we do, you know, if it wasn't such a prevalent problem out there, and again, folks, the reason why I bring it up is because I'm asked, okay? I get emails from people and they say, "What do you think about this and what do you think about that? Don't you think Trump's really a puppet? Don't you think he's secretly taking orders from Netanyahu and blah blah blah?" And I try to reason with these people and say, No. Look at the footprints of this thing. Okay, you know, if you walk through the woods, you know, you can tell all sorts of footprints. You know, that's a deer, that's an elk, that's a moose, that's a bear, that's a mountain lion, that's a coyote, that's a wolf, blah blah blah. You can tell by the footprints. Okay. By the same token, folks, when you see political footprints that a particular leader makes, then you're able to figure out what kind of political creature he is. And the footprints that the president is leaving, especially in the Middle East, indicates that all of these people, all of these analysts with their websites and their podcasts and all of the rest of that who are saying that Trump is a slave simply aren't reading the signs accurately. Now let's just talk about this Syria business here for a moment. Let's see. We've got another sound bite here, Scott, that I want to play very quickly. So let's, is it this one? Yeah, I think it's this one. No, it's not that one. Hold on. Hold on, folks.
From a price on his head to head of state, President Trump welcoming Syrian leader Ahmed al-Shara to the White House today, a man who once had a $10 million bounty on his head for ties to al-Qaeda. Al-Shara is even designated a terrorist by the U.S. in 2013, a list he's since been removed from. Now the president is welcoming the leader to Washington months after an uprising toppled longtime dictator there in Syria, Bashar al-Assad. Let's bring in our White House correspondent, Karen Travers, along with foreign correspondent Marcus Moore. So, Karen, how significant is this visit? And what is President Trump hoping to accomplish here?
Kira, it's a historic visit, the first time a Syrian leader has been here to the White House. And it comes after the president met with al-Shara back in May in Saudi Arabia. That was a meeting that, of course, marked the first time that a U.S. president had engaged with a Syrian leader since the year 2000. So that in and of itself was also historic. This is significant, though, when you look at how al-Shara has come to this position, leading that rebel force that overthrew the Assad regime back in December, and then taking over as the leader in that country. He is here today to push for a full repeal of U.S. sanctions on his country. The president had waived those sanctions back in May. Great fanfare on that trip to the Middle East. He said it was one of the biggest applause lines he got on that trip to the Middle East. And now, though, it will take an act of Congress, though, to permanently lift the sanctions. So al-Shara is here to make his case on that. Notably, Kira, this meeting is taking place behind closed doors, closed to the press. We haven't had a chance to see the two leaders together or ask questions of them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if you will have the opportunity to ask questions from both of them. We want to be there for sure. Marcus, tell us more about al-Shara. This is a man who was once designated a terrorist by the United States, now shaking hands with the president at the White House.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable turn of events, and there's a lot of mystery surrounding his early life. Journalists and investigators have tried to piece a lot of that together, and in particular, to learn how strongly he has held Islamist views. As you know, he was part of Al-Qaeda, and he fought the U.S. in Iraq, as Karen said there, and he also had a relationship with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the former leader. Enemies of the U.S. To someone that the president has praised as strong. And so we'll wait to see exactly how he will continue to govern Syria. But as Karen just alluded to, one of his main goals is to try to rebuild the country after some 14 years of civil war. And certainly that makes this meeting that he's having with President Trump critical.
Well, Karen, Trump and Al-Shaw first met in May in Saudi, and at the time, Trump described him as a young, attractive guy. I don't think we can forget that quote. This is just another example of the White House's diplomatic inroads with Arabic countries.
Yeah, it's about Syria, as Marcus just noted there, and this is the administration looking to help that country with reconstruction and rebuilding. But Kira, the steps the president had announced in May with the lifting of sanctions on Syria were really driven in large part by the other countries in the region that were putting pressure on the president and really making an appeal for him to do this. He said that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, was a big driver of that and that he was pleased to announce it while he was in Riyadh. And as I said, this was a very big applause line for the president. There was a lot of approval of this when the president announced he would be taking this step to help Syria as they move forward with reconstruction. It's going to be very expensive. It's going to be very time consuming and a lot of questions about who will take the lead and help on that and what the United States might contribute to it. But the president has had positive words recently for the Syrian leader, saying he's done a good job and that Syria has made important steps recently.
We're going to follow the meeting and whatever we can get from it, for sure. Karen Travers, Marcus Morth.
Okay, so folks, based upon both of the sound bites dealing with the meeting between the president and Ahmed al-Sharaa, some very interesting things. Number one, no press. There were no reporters allowed in the room. It was a very private meeting. The one thing that has come out of it is that the president has said, well, we need the Syrians to defeat ISIS. Folks, I'm sorry, but when was the last time we heard about any trouble from ISIS? Okay? When's the last time? Stas, when was the last time we heard about any trouble from ISIS?
Before Trump got in, it was they used to complain about ISIS, and then it changed to overweight white guys after.
Right, exactly. Yeah. ISIS is gone. I mean, that's one of the things that, all right, they're not completely gone, folks, but the reports that were in the news, especially during the Obama years, of all the atrocities, you know, the beheadings and things like that, when's the last time we heard anything about that? I'm not saying they don't exist. What I'm saying is that the president saying that we have to cultivate this relationship with Syria in order to defeat ISIS is a cover story. Stas, why is the president of Syria there to meet with the president if it's not to discuss how they're going to defeat ISIS together?
He's meeting with the new head of Syria, an Al-Qaeda strongman. He's telling him, I don't want the Israelis to take over your region.
Absolutely.
They have bombed the original Syria. You work for me now. And in the Trumpian way, I'm sure that's why he says weird stuff like, this guy's handsome.
Yeah.
He's handsome. It's right. Trump's weird way. Behind the scenes, I can only imagine he's probably saying stuff like, look, I know you were working for the Israelis. You know, and I know when they're done with you, they're going to waste you. You look at what happens to the guys that work for them, you know, not to be so dramatic, but that's what I feel. That's one of the many things that you discussed. Like,
oh, no, for sure. And not just with Syria, but again, we cannot leave Turkey out of this equation, folks, because if you pay close attention to what's going on, and I'm talking about going back years, okay, one of the things that the president is intent upon doing is that he is going to bring the Turks and the Syrians together. Okay, the Turks are an extremely powerful country. Man for man, without the nuclear weapons, they would wipe the floor up with the IDF in no time, and would love every opportunity, every minute of being able to do it. So what we have here, folks, is basically a recreation of what existed back during the time of Nasser, the leader of Egypt. He created this thing known as the UAR, the United Arab Republic, where Egypt and Syria, even though they were separate, independent countries, they formed this alliance with each other against Israel, the United Arab Republic. Okay? I think that the president is trying to do the same thing with Syria and Turkey. Because, let's face it, the Turks hate the Israelis. They blame the Israelis for taking their empire away from them after World War I. They've lost a lot of territory. They know that the Kurds, especially the PKK, the Kurdish Workers' Party, that they are being funded and trained and armed by the Israelis. And so what the president is doing is he is working through Erdogan, president of Turkey, in order to create this Leviathan, this powerhouse, to push back against Israel. And the Syrian president understands this, which is why he made a demand when he met with the president, where he said that his country's not going to do anything unless the president forces the Israelis to move out of the Syrian territories that they have stolen. And the news is, according to the president of Syria, that Trump agreed to this. Okay, this was a Times of Israel story that just appeared today. Syrian leader says U.S. president will quickly push, quote unquote, for a solution to the issue, says that the Israeli pullout, a precondition for a security deal with Israel, and that Trump supports it. Now, folks, it's possible that the Syrian president made this statement without it being foundationed in reality, or that he didn't get the go-ahead from Trump ahead of time to make that statement, but I doubt it. Okay, he would not risk rebuilding his country and keeping the Jews, the thieving Jews, from stealing Syria as they completely intend to do. He would not put all of that at risk by making an irresponsible statement about how President Trump supports the notion of pushing of the Israelis getting out of Syria. He wouldn't risk that, which means that he had the approval from the president ahead of time to make that statement. Do you understand what I'm saying here, folks? Okay, what I'm saying is Trump is communicating with Netanyahu through the Syrian president. He's saying, listen, all of this greater Israel business, forget it. Okay, forget it. You're not getting Syria. You're not getting the West Bank. You're not getting Gaza. You're not getting the Sinai. You're not getting Lebanon. You're not getting parts of Turkey, folks, because this is one of the things that Erdogan has said recently, as a matter of fact, where he has addressed his nation and he has said, listen, after they get done with Gaza, they're going to eventually come after Turkey too, because they consider Turkey to be part of greater Israel. Okay, so this is Trump's way of communicating with Netanyahu and the rest of these religious crazies, these jihadists, and saying, look, the greater Israel thing, forget it. You're not getting Gaza. You're not getting any of this. I'm going to build Turkey and Syria up, but bring them together just the way that Nasser did with the United Arab Republic. And you're going to have your little slice of land, but that's it. Stas, what are your thoughts about this this business of Trump agreeing with the Syrian president that the Jews are going to be forced to evacuate Syria.
But this is huge. I mean, this is what it's all about. And to
but
all
isn't
the
that? But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Isn't that what Netanyahu secretly wants? And that's why Trump's doing it. Isn't that
I don't
it?
I don't think Netanyahu wants Trump to dominate that region. This is the stupidity of the not
thank
so
you.
Bright
thank
alternative
you.
Media.
Thank
I mean,
you. Thank you.
And they go back to. I mean, I don't think Marion Adelson wants Trump dealing with this guy in Erdogan. If she controlled him, like they're saying, we'd be 24-hour bombing Tehran right now.
Mm-hmm.
Does Marion Adelson want Qatar to have a base in Idaho? Does Marion Adelson want Trump to be building up this coalition? Everybody has missed the mark. To what extent people like Max Goldblum and Iron Mate and the Judging Freedom, they don't have their eyes on this. They're like Marion Adelson, Marion Adelson. Let's back up a second. She doesn't have the kind of cash that Qatar has.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I realize she's the Jews, but she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She can't build the largest building in the world. They have certain limits. Although they're massive on Wall Street, you're talking about huge money here. And you're talking about a guy like Trump, who they put down all the time. He knows how to go and talk to these people. And I'm sure he's saying, look, you either go with me or Israel will pick you off one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a chance here, however slim, to try to tame this beast. And I don't know why, you know, they're like, he got an airplane for them. And they're kind of implying like, oh, he's with the elites. And this is what I was trying to express earlier. I think people think that, you know, there's an elite world and it's all monolithic and they're against the people. And that already exists. The rich are the rich. They do run everything. What the problem is, fanatics blowing up the world is more immediate like that. And people always go up and they see Trump with his bit of wealth and like, yeah, he's in on it with them. And it's the eyes wide shut meetings, and they're all number one. And there's, you know, well, I'm going real far afield, but you know how these people think that oh, there's a big chart and there's
I understand exactly what you're saying, and it's a brilliant point.
The Templars and the rich people, they're all together.
Yes. And that's not it. That is not it, folks. We do have a genuine gang war going on here within these elites. Okay, you've got the Jews and you've got their power. And then you've got the WASPs, as Stas said earlier. You've got all sorts of people with money. And then you've got this, within the group of Jews, you've got this one element of crazies that want to burn down everything. And so all of these elites are saying, we're going to lose everything. Everything that we, our families, our dynasties have built up over the course of centuries, these insane Jews are going to see all of this go up in a pillar of smoke. And this is the pushback, folks. Okay, even if you don't like Donald Trump and some of these other individuals, fine. Just understand that it's not as simple a game as, you know, us versus them, that you're going to hear on a lot of these alternative media outlets. And yes, folks, if it weren't for the fact that these kinds of conversations do have real-world results, including war, folks, as we've pointed out many times on this program, the reason we went to war in the Middle East and started this apocalyptic fire is because people believed what they were being told about Islam, about terrorism, about the Middle East, about Israel being our ally. Okay, so we do live and die based upon the nature of the conversation that's taking place. Okay, so so Stas, what does all of this mean? In the, you know, again, the Terminator is getting up off the floor. He's not going to be stopped by a couple of shotgun blasts. The fact that the president has made these moves with Syria, the fact that he's very close with Erdogan, the fact that he is now, they're planning to build a $500 million base in southern Israel, and enough to house and take care of the needs of 2,000 soldiers, folks, okay? What does all of this mean in terms of Netanyahu and these religious crazies? How do they view this, and how are they likely to respond to this?
They are outraged more than they've been in 2,000 or 3,000 years.
Yes, yes.
And it's because Trump is using real-world military and
yes.
financial power to try to stop this. It's like I said to you off podcast the other day. I don't know what, and here I am, I'm taking a shot at the peace goody-goody movement, which for whatever reason I hate, like the Democracy Now. He's offering, him and Musk are coming up with this Trump-Gaza thing, and they're outraged. Well, you're not going to stop the meanest people, the most powerful people in the world with an acoustic guitar concert. You know what I'm saying? Hey, pass the bucket for Gaza. We have millions of people dying here. You know, you've got to come up with this thing, which is, yeah, it sounds crazy, but, you know, a land deal, Trump Gaza, stuff to feed these powerful people some meat to stop it.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't like it. I mean, I get it, you know, but they're not going to end it that way. So, you know, Democracy Now, even the gray zone that people like, well, what do you propose? And he'll say, oh, Trump is making money with his cryptocurrency. Trump wants to turn Gaza into Florida. Well, these are ideas that you pitch to other powerful people to stop an
absolutely
horrible thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like building that consensus at the UN. Okay, you get a bunch of countries, a bunch of rich people in these countries that see an investment opportunity in Gaza, and now you've got an international coalition of people that want to go forward with his plans. And how is Benjamin Netanyahu going to stop that? You know, one of the things that was mentioned in the soundbite, the most recent one, I should have brought it up earlier. You know, the sanctions that the Trump wants to get lifted from Syria. One of the things they mentioned is that it's going to take an act of Congress to do this. Now, Stas, I know you're going to give the right answer on this. What's likely to happen in Congress? And here's what we're talking about, folks. All right, you want to see what happens when you have elected people who bow, who bend the knee and bend over for Benjamin Netanyahu. You're going to see it when the president pushes to get these sanctions lifted off of Syria. Okay, Netanyahu and his people are going to get to where they're already at work, throttling every member of Congress, saying, you know, you can't vote to lift these sanctions. This guy used to be Al-Qaeda, blah, blah, blah. Again, folks, anybody who thinks that the president can just snap his fingers or pick up the phone and get something done, and so therefore he's the reason, he's to blame for all of this carnage that's going on in the Middle East. You're not paying attention to how this piece of machinery actually functions. What's likely to happen, Stas, when the president starts pushing his people, and I hate to say it, folks, but people like Thomas Massie, who I like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I like, some of these other people who don't see the bigger picture involved in all this, they're going to wind up doing exactly what Netanyahu wants them to do. Even though they never got a personal phone call from Netanyahu, it'll be from all of their church-going voters back in their district who are saying, you can't vote to lift these sanctions. You know, and why are these church-going people doing it? Because their preacher, their pastor, whoever, is telling them to. And why is he telling them to? Because he got the call from whoever. Whatever the Jewish lobby person says, listen, you push all of your people in church to call their representatives and tell them not to lift the sanctions. What do you think about that, Stas?
Yeah, they're gonna show their control of Congress, showing that, you know, that's why these people who think it's easy for Trump to you just make a phone call of a two-state solution, they'll call every contact they got there, and anytime any Gentile goy politician, if you will, goes against them, you know, or they lose focus, even though I love Marjorie Taylor Greene, but even her and Massey's a cool guy, but they kind of go a little bit simple.
They don't see the bigger picture. They're not seeing the bigger picture on some of these things.
And they see
something that looks like it's unconstitutional. They see something that looks like it's just a continuation of the, you know, what happened before, and they're not looking at the bigger picture, which is World War III.
No, nobody can focus on that. And we were waiting for the next false flag or whatever, and it looks like something comes out once in a while. Now they're bringing back the Epstein files into Trump now, saying there were emails. So they're always ready with something each week or each few weeks to throw back at the president to stop him. And this is a problem. And I think this goes to what I was trying to express, that too many people still think there's this giant elite unit that Trump is part of it because he's, you know, wealthy with the real estate thing, and they're not exactly what you said. The reality that there's a lot of fighting, that there is real things that are contested, that even though the Israelis and their Jewish counterparts in, you know, whatever, London and America and the EU are so powerful, there's still, even for them, some things that are up for grabs. The fighting amongst the Democrats and the Republicans, and the competition between the Arab world and Israel. You know, they have their oil money and they put up a fight, and they still do. And it's not all in the bag. I keep thinking in my mind these conspiracy books that have these diagrams that go, oh, it's the Templars, it's the Rosicrucians, the Illuminati, the Nazis are still out there somehow, and the communists.
Wonder who's behind that.
Yeah. Who owns the money to publish all those books that confuse people? You know, I don't know how many, got particular older guys drag up these, oh, have you read the unauthorized biography of Bush or whatever? the Rockefellers are rich, but they're dead. You know, come on, they're dead. They're dead. They're old. I mean, no, you talk to old guys. No, it's still the Rockefeller medicine or something like that. No, get into it's 2025. The Israelis want to blow us up, and they've already killed everybody in Gaza. They want to show, they want to continue, and I don't, somehow people can't focus on the moment. And there's also so much in the alternative media that they constantly go through. They'll open up their dialogue with, the president has no power. Remember Tex Mars? He's like a turtle on a fence post. I mean, if he didn't have any power, then why all this thing? And then that has led to where we are now, that they're faking. Trump is faking. He's faking. Yeah. He's best friends with Netanyahu. This is all a fake. I mean, why would... If they were faking, why would they risk open themselves to doubt with the faking?
Yeah.
Just go right on.
If I didn't know better, I'd say that you're a very frustrated individual, that you have had one too many conversations with people who just... Did you ever see the Monty Python Holy Grail? Did you see that? Remember the scene where the there's going to be the wedding and the sissy son doesn't want to get married, and so the father says, "You got to marry her because we need land. You know, we live swamp castle." So he calls the guards in, right? The two guards, and he says to the guards, "Make sure that the prince doesn't leave." And he has to keep explaining it to them over and over and over again. Stay here, and make sure that the prince doesn't leave. Okay. And he has to keep explaining, and then he thinks that he's succeeded in making them understand, and he goes to walk out the room, and they start following him, and he says, what are you doing? Where are you going? They said, well, we're coming with you. And he said, no, you stay here and make sure that he doesn't leave. This is what it's like having this conversation with these people, where you explain and explain and explain, and you think that you're about to, you know, you got it, you know, you made the case, and then they say something, and then that's why you wind up being frustrated and perplexed. So anyway, Stas, we are at the end of the program today. It was a great discussion, as always. Not the kind of discussion, unfortunately, that is going to be heard in too many other places. What do we need to worry about as a result of what the president has done just in the last week? He's building a base in southern Israel. He's building a base, military base, for U.S. troops in Damascus. He's welcomed the president of Syria in. He's going to be building up this new powerhouse, this economic and military powerhouse between Turkey and Syria. What do we have to worry about with regards to Netanyahu and the rest of these arsonists who are intent upon burning the entire world down?
Well, these are brilliant moves made by our president, or as maybe the Israelis think of our Roman emperor,
yep,
whatever they think. They're brilliant moves, and I am not aware to the extent of if there is a vulnerability to Israel. I am not aware. They're not going to tell me that they will fall if the Turks and the Syrians and Jordan and Egypt finally get their act together under some tutelage with the American. Is it the end of their empire and their dreams? They're not going to share that with me, man. They're not going to tell me if they're on the ropes. I have no idea. So if they are, which maybe it could be, and Trump's moving to do something, I mean, they could do anything desperately.
Well, ultimately, Stas, I'm going to answer my own question here with a concept that we will pick up in a future podcast. But ultimately, if the Jews are contained behind 1967 lines, and if they are stopped from moving forward with their plans, and if peace breaks out in the region, Israel will cease to exist. Israel, as a political creature, can only live in an environment of constant stress and tension, warfare, where she's surrounded by enemies all the time. And so if suddenly all of these countries now, there's no war, there's no more enemy coming over Israel's borders, Israel doesn't have to worry about everything because the United States has taken care of all of it, you will see Israel just begin the process of disintegration. That's ultimately, anybody who is looking for an end to the Zionist state, okay, as we see all of these various alternative media people say, okay, this situation in what the president of the United States is doing. He says he wants to save Israel, but the fact of the matter, folks, is that if all of Israel's enemies are suddenly told to stand down, and it won't take long. It will not. It'll take less than a generation of no warfare before the entire Jewish state thing just completely crumbles because they don't have any enemies. Anyway, Stas, that's it for today. What do you want to tell the folks before we cut everybody loose?
If you doubt what we're saying here and you think that it's nonsense and the president doesn't have a master plan together with Qatar and now the new leadership of Syria, the phony Al-Qaeda guy, like I like to refer to him, I guess, just look at the awful news sources. Check out how much they are criticizing the president over Qatar, how much they are doing that, and judge for yourself. Don't look at Rents or, I don't know, David Icke's website or wherever you get your information. Look at the real awful news. See how much they're criticizing over and over and over this, and get a clue and see that he's doing, if they're criticizing him, he's doing something right.
Yep.
Yep. And
You know as much about a person based upon who their friends are as you do based upon who their enemies are. And that's the bottom line. And even though, folks, yes, I know, Netanyahu says nice things and Smotrich says nice things, that's what gangsters do, folks. They say nice things when they're out in public, and then behind closed doors, they start making their plans on how they're going to whack somebody and take over his territory. Anyway, that's it for today. Staza, hold on there for just a second. I'm going to close out the program, but I want to talk to you off the air. Okay, folks, so our eternal gratitude, as always, for our good friend Staza for a fascinating conversation. I hope it made sense. It should make sense, folks. I know that the world is just a really crazy in these, but you know, it's in these kind of moments where we really have to keep our wits about us and not allow ourselves to fall into there are just so many pieces of unexploded ordnance that are in our fields, in our pathways where we walk in life, and I'm talking about informational ordnance, you know. And it's so easy, just like the stories of how the Jews leave bombs hidden in toys for little Palestinian and Lebanese children to pick up, knowing that the kids will pick it up. Well, the Jews do the same thing with information, folks. They package it in such a way that we Gentiles look at it and we say, oh gosh, that looks really interesting. I'm going to go look at that. And, you know, what I'm thinking about in particular, folks, is somebody had left a comment on the website concerning, I think, what Staz and I were talking about last week on the program about Erica Kirk, the widow of Charlie Kirk, and the vice president. And somebody left a comment and then had a YouTube video showing Erica Kirk wearing, I don't know, some black leather pants or something, you know, and how she hugged the vice president at some gathering. And it's like, you know, the Jews love it. They absolutely love it when we suddenly throw our attention, our limited attention span, on something like that. Talking about Erica Kirk wearing leather pants and the way that she hugged the vice president. Now we're not talking about the Jews' plans for blowing up the world, taking over the Middle East and all the rest of that. So what I'm saying here, folks, is we have to be very careful. Okay, you know, who knows how many times that particular video of Erica Kirk got passed around. It could be millions of times. Now, all of a sudden, you've got all of these Gentiles who are talking about something that plays no role in what's actually going on right now. Anyway, that's a conversation for another time. So that's it for today, folks. I thank you for your time and your attention. You know, we're already overwhelmed with information these days. So for those of you out there who do tune in to hear the conversations on this podcast, information and analysis that, unfortunately, folks, you're not going to run in to too many other places. We appreciate that. You know, that's an hour or whatever of your life that you'll never get back. And think about these things, folks. Think about them, because, you know, we're at this stage now where we really don't have any room for mistakes that close. It's that down to the wire. So that's it for today, folks. Today's November 12th, 2025 edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. 2025, year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. And best, folks, he is not King of the Jews. The Jews have made that clear, that they don't want to have anything to do with him. He is King of the Gentiles, and therefore, listen to what your king tells you.